It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
And here we go, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you all along. Always good to see my friend Mike Ward. Man, I'm always good to be seen. We got some later on in the show, got some bottom fishing to talk about. I enjoyed the exploits of Mike's last trip.
Yeah, what a great trip.
And listen, the scamp throats.
I've been having
big dinners there, so I appreciate that. We'll talk more about that trip, but it's time to check in and find out what's going on right here in South Alabama, specifically coming out of South Baldwin County, and the report from our friends at J&M Tackle. Chris is on. I don't know. Let's ask Brent from J&M. Do you say he's on assignment? What do you say? You know how in the news they'll say so and so is on assignment. Is Chris on assignment?
On an assignment?
Yeah, see, you know, in the news always say, so-and-so is on assignment tonight, but I'm filling in. So I was going to mess with Chris. He's on assignment.
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, that he is.
Probably fishing. All right, so we'll he's not on here, so we can pick on him all we want on today's show.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're in on it, Brent. So let's do this. Kind of walk us through what's been happening at J&M, what reports you're getting, and starting off offshore. You mentioned something during the news break to me that got my attention. And this time of year, often people start talking about white marlin. You said you're getting some reports?
Yes, sir. Yep. So that's been kind of the main thing right now. This time of year, typically, our yellowfin are kind of popping off, but so far it's been a little slower, in my opinion. So the white marlin, or what I've been hearing, has been really popping off lately in the last week or so.
Well, that's okay. So it does seem like it's a later summer thing, and I'm not any pro at it, but it seems like I get more white marlin reports. It's an August, September, even October thing.
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
I wonder.
And the same way with sailfish, I would think. Sailfish get better as the fall gets here, too.
You know.
Yeah, and
go ahead.
So I was going to say that clean water push we had a few weeks ago at the squiggles kind of pushed all those sailfish, and since the dirty water moved out, it seemed like the bite kind of slowed down, but definitely picked up a lot more around kind of the nipple area for the white marlin this week. I've heard a few reports of a couple boats going, more than five in a day, which is always good to hear.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
I like that. We often on the show, we talk about what people are doing catching blues, but give me an idea. Like, if I walk into J&M, what am I doing for white marlin? Is it different? Am I pulling different lures? Am I doing it differently? What would you hook me up with?
Yeah, typically it would be smaller baits. Of course, you can't go wrong with a blue and white islander and a ballyhoo.
Mm-hmm.
But naked ballyhoo is a great option. A lot of people are using circle hook rigs with your ringer swivels. That's kind of a popular method now. I still like the tried and true, smaller J hooks, thin wire J hooks like the owners and whatnot. But basically for the most part, smaller dink baits and flying fish, kind of match the hatch style.
Right. Are they using live bait at all?
Yeah, that's another popular way to do it too. You could bump full live baits around. Definitely want some better live baits, cigar minnows, LY, stuff like that. I don't want to be using pinfish or nothing like that. But,
right. Well, they don't throw good, yeah.
No, sir.
Yeah.
Brent, let's talk about this too. Let's come inshore a little bit here in the near shore report. Maybe some other fish that, we're talking about what got pushed in with that water, talking about white marlin. What about on the bottom fishing front?
Yeah, absolutely. So the red group are what are kind of popping in right now, which has been awesome. So typically when a storm kind of moves through to the east like we had Tropical Storm Bertha, pushed a big, what I say, like a migration or a wall of grouper. I'm not really sure what it looks like visually, but everybody was catching a ton of red grouper right after the storm, and we're still seeing kind of residual bites from that, too.
I guess that's more prevalent to the east, south of Orange Beach and to the east than it is probably to the west, because I haven't heard of that much over south of
Send them over here.
Dolphin Island, yeah.
Well, that's actually – have y'all not been catching them off Dolphin Island? So – because that's where a lot of the reports kind of came from. So we had one of my buddies out of Orange Beach. Now, they do fish to the west. They actually caught more red grouper on their six-hour charter than they did red snapper.
Brent, stop with that. Stop right there. Stop right there. They caught more red grouper than red snapper.
Yes, sir. They caught 32 red grouper. Now, keep in mind, obviously, only four can be kept in Alabama on the boat per person. But they caught 32 in total, which is mind-boggling.
That's a lot. That's a lot of red
grouper. One trip. Heck, that's might be a lifetime for some people, and that's one trip. Well, that's got my attention.
Too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I don't know anybody. I'm sure. I mean, there is some red grouper caught off of Dolphin Island, but I haven't heard the reports of
when now we're getting
that
here.
Kind of red grouper fishing.
What can you divulge? You can send me a text with the coordinates. But how deep were they fishing?
So anywhere from 40 feet to, I heard of 250. So a lot of public numbers were actually kind of covered
for
them.
They caught some in 40?
Yeah, so I heard
I'm picking up my jaw right now. Golly.
Now, keep in mind, I wouldn't expect them at 40, but that is the shallowest I heard, which was pretty crazy. But that's right off the pass there, 3 miles. I heard of a few being caught at the 3 mile barge, which is just crazy. But they were catching a ton at the bridge rubble area, which obviously is all public, but that's about 90 foot of water.
Yeah.
Live cigar minnows was what I heard was working really well, and then some people were throwing kind of soft plastic, like Squid Trek style vertical jigs, and they were catching them on those too. But obviously, it's just fighting between the grouper or fighting between the snapper to get to the grouper.
Right. But on that day, the grouper won.
On that day.
What a report, man. That's awesome.
That is. That's the best report I've heard of red grouper ever.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, sir.
Let's come back and let's come back inside and talk about what's happening here. I mean, it's August. Water's hot. Oxygen gas is off, but trout and redfish, what's the fishing? Is it just night fishing, Dave? What's going on inshore?
Well, night fishing, in my opinion, it's on fire. I've been a few times this past week just messing around, and I mean, it's endless amounts of, your average size trout and smaller redfish. But a lot of live shrimp and small kind of crappie jig styles lures for the night fishing. And then kind of daytime trout fishing, doing a lot of popping corks, live shrimp, just kind of drifting along the flats has been super, super good for us. Finding bait schools, pulling up on those, and kind of casting around those bait schools. That's kind of what we've been doing. It's been working really well, but I will say redfish are a little on the slower side, but trout are on fire.
And you mentioned that, and think about learning that over the years, fishing lights, downscale is important. I mean, if you're match the hatch with glass minnows or whatever, maybe not the same size, jigs you're throwing and soft plastics you're throwing in the daytime, scale down. You all have that stuff, like the smaller plastics?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So I've been trying to kind of have us carry more crappie jig style stuff, but we just started carrying these really cool JYG. They're 2-inch little kind of LY mimic soft plastic swim baits is what they are, but they're super, super good. They work really well for those trout, for the redfish. You can bounce them on the bottom for a flounder if you wanted to, but just downscaling, getting down to the light fluorocarbon small lures. Anything that's kind of mimicking your shrimp or your little glass minnows, LYs, that's kind of where you want to be.
Good stuff. All right, tell folks about J&M hours. What days of the week, what hours are you open?
Yes, sir. Yeah, Monday through Sunday. Sunday we open at 5, close at 2. all the other days it's going to be 5 to 5:30 on the weekdays and 5 to 6 on the week on Friday and Saturday.
Good stuff. All right. I appreciate your time, and we'll do it again. We'll just pile on Chris and just talk trash when he's not here.
Yes, sir. Sounds good.
All right. There goes Brent at J&M Tackle. Big thank you for the report. And by the way, that many red grouper?
It's pretty sporty, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's sporty.
And they have live bait there, too. You can go buy live shrimp at J&M if you need it.
I'm just thinking... Yeah, that many red grouper get. I mean, to catch those, more of those than red snapper. I've always heard about grouper moving, all different kinds of grouper moving in after a storm.
Yes, coming from the east.
Yeah.
If a storm comes from the east, yes.
I wonder how long, Dr. Powers, if you're listening, I would love to know if they, when they push in after a storm, if USA, you know, Sea Lab or USA Marine Sciences go out and put some tags on them, like some... like GPS tags, and see how long they stay before they go, oh, I got to go back southeast. You know what I'm saying? Like, when they come in,
yeah.
Why don't they just set up shop longer term?
Probably because they get caught.
He's probably right. You know, and that's, I mean, that 40 feet of water is interesting, too. I wonder if we had enough, like...
Well, in Florida, I mean, a lot of grouper are caught in
very
shallow
close.
Water.
Well, yeah. And they have, you know, and I'm thinking about places I went there, they have rock outcroppings, old coral and limestone and stuff like that. Those grouper have, you may be in just 20 feet of water, but there's grouper hidey holes. That's a technical term there for it. But.
Yeah, technical. Hidey holes.
I'm going to go catch some red grouper. All right, coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, Red Grouper. I mean, wow. Those are...
Red Grouper on the brain, boy.
Now, you know, it's just, I think the reality is what you didn't grow up around.
Yeah.
So, understand we have grouper here, but growing up the way we fished, we caught some grouper, but it was snapper.
Yeah.
Just, it was a rare thing. And I didn't fish as deep as, you know, we'd be fishing 120 feet of water. Right, growing up. So I've had this obsession when I go other places. I always, they're like, what do you want to catch today? You'd be down in Florida. I'm like, I want to catch some grouper. They're like, we got some snap. Because it's the different thing.
Sure.
For me, right?
Catch all snap you want here.
Right. So when I hear that, you know, you got a good grouper bite here, I get real excited. I like it a lot.
You know, I haven't seen, and usually something like that where you're catching a lot of red grouper or something, you see it on Facebook or
right.
social media or whatever.
Well, we may not be following the same people.
Well, maybe not. I don't know. Are you seeing?
No, but I just don't spend the time on the social media that most people do.
Well, I mean, I don't spend a ton of time, but if they're catching that many red grouper, I would normally see, you know.
I have to open up to see. Go to Facebook here. Let me go to my regular feed. And, you know, here's the problem, too. This is a blend, if you go through there, of what I do for a living and what I do for fun.
Yeah.
So, even though I don't do a ton of political stuff and I don't get in answering a lot of comments and stuff on Facebook because of doing what I do Monday through Friday, it would be. The nature of Monday through Friday stuff, I do that while I'm on the air.
Yeah.
But I don't, you know, but it's interesting. I opened this up and it's a mix of news stories and then, here's somebody's millet there.
I guess. Yeah.
So we'll get to that, deer targets, and then news story, and then let's see, fishing. It's our friend Erica Thomas, then some bears, some elk hunting.
Yeah.
And then political. So, well, yeah, that's my mix. I'm looking for red grouper, though. I'll keep scrolling, let you know.
We're getting into where you're going to start seeing a lot of hunting because, I mean, it's just right here. Well, in some places, elk season is opening here in just a few days.
Yeah, I told you. In Utah, their spike, it's the strangest thing. We've talked about it before on the show. And I mean, we'll do it again. I have to call my buddies that live out in Utah to explain it. But they have a spike bull season. Spike bull, and it can have maybe one brow tine.
Yeah.
You can't hunt. These units, like where I mule deer hunted last year, is like one of the premier elk units in the nation. Premier in Utah. They've got incredible, I mean, the... governor's tag winners always end up hunting in that unit and all that.
Yeah.
But they've got this, yeah, to shoot. I said, why are y'all doing this? I think it was the politics back then when they started having restricted units for antlers. The people were like, well, hell with y'all, we're never going to get that, you know, or heck with you guys, or whatever they say.
Yeah.
We're never going to get to do that. So they let them go shoot. It's archery hunt, but you shoot spikes. I know that starts next week after next.
Yeah.
And then I told you, I turned my tag back in. I drew Colorado archery elk this year, but I turned my tag in. So I kept my points, turned my tag in, and do it again, hopefully in another year or two. So
for archery, you're going to try to get an archery tag?
Well, I did. I got drawn this year for Colorado. Yeah, I'll keep putting in because you build points. I've got, I've had, you know, burn points for mule deer in Colorado going out and hunting, but I've been just building archery elk points. And one of my problems, too, is I can get a group of guys to go with me and build points and draw and go mule deer hunt with rifles.
Yeah.
It's a fewer people that say yes to me that when I go, well, we're going to go to about 9,000 feet of elevation and we're going to camp and we're going to hunt from there archery wise. Fewer people return that text. So
yes.
I was going to be solo this year on that trip too. So nevertheless, and I do want to talk, I mean, hunting, there's so much, I mean, got gator hunting going on this weekend.
Yeah.
Right. So this is this will be the first weekend. You got gator hunting going on. And then we got birds galore. We'll talk about that in a second. But I do want to talk about your last fishing trip before we get into it, because as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, I've been enjoying the spoils of your trip.
Yeah.
You went on, I mean, an epic bottom fishing trip.
We did. We had a really, really good trip going out of Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, over there, it almost makes it worth going over there because you can keep four snapper per person.
Yep.
So we had six people, so we caught a limit of snapper both days, caught way more than a limit of snapper, just released a bunch of them.
Right.
Each day, so we brought back 48 snapper. So,
a nice snapper, too.
Yeah. You know, so if we'd have been here in Alabama on a two-day trip, I would have been 24.
Mm-hmm.
So twice as many. You know, so that kind of makes it worth the ride over there, 4-hour drive over there pulling the boat. So,
now, that does make it doubles, you know, it's 4 days worth in 2 days for snapper.
Yeah, the only problem is you got to get motel rooms or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only issue.
Yeah, but
there.
Y'all, he's burying the lead. So, y'all had great snapper running. They were not, I went by your house when you got in. Great bunch of snapper.
And stole some scamp from me.
I didn't stole. I relocated some scamp. But that's what I'm going to say. You're bearing the lead because snapper fishing was great, but so was everything else on the
Everything
bottom.
Else was great, Sean. It really was.
Y'all's beeliners, your scamp.
Yeah, we caught
grouper.
I mean, 15 or 16 scamp that we caught.
Y'all.
Caught a 50-pound black grouper.
I mean, monster.
It was 50 pounds on the scale. Exactly, 50 pounds.
That monster.
Everybody kind of guessed him at 38, 40, mm-hmm. 42, but he was 50 pounds
it's
on
thick.
The scale. He was a good grouper.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, y'all had, and y'all were going areas that you've kingfished before, but you went back and you bottom fished there.
Yes. Places that I fish a lot,
mm-hmm.
king mackerel fishing.
But you're not stopping and bottom fishing.
I never stop and bottom fish, you know. The good thing about Louisiana, I mean, you don't have to have, I mean, I got some semi-private stuff over mm-hmm. there, but you don't really have to have
You fish it. Rigs. And I talked about a lot when I was over at your house.
Yeah.
And I was like, look, I mean, y'all whacked them. And I said, well, what, you know, were you fishing live bottom or something? You said, no, a lot of this was from rigs.
Just rigs.
Rigs,
sunk rigs standing up, you know, just, I got a couple mm-hmm. spots over there, but we caught them everywhere. It didn't matter. And then we finally, the last day, for about an hour and a half, we finally made it out to natural bottom. We just, you know, mm-hmm. we want to stop here. We want to stop there. I mean, we're catching fish here. We're catching fish there. You know,
don't leave fish to catch fish.
So it just took us a long time to get out to the natural bottom, which the natural bottom out of where
it's
we're fishing.
It's a ways out, huh?
90 miles.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it took us all day to get out there, and we fished for about an hour and a half or so out there. And we caught scamp out there. We caught snapper out there. We caught beeliners and white snapper, and I mean,
but you were doing that at the rigs not at 90 miles. You were doing stuff. I mean,
oh, yes. Yeah, we just wasn't catching the beeliners.
Right.
Yeah, but we'd catch a snap and scamp everywhere we went, just about, really. It's a different place over there.
Well, that's a heck
of a... You can't do that around here.
No, and I wonder, you know, that area doesn't get the pressure.
Not as much. You're right.
And I do wonder, you know, and while they have lost a ton of rigs in Louisiana, they still got way more than we have.
Yes, they do. And they've sunk a lot of them, just like they have here. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a fair amount south of Dauphin Island that have been sunk. But there's a lot more of them over there.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot more stuff to fish over there.
Yeah.
And the further west you go over there, the less people you see. I mean, we didn't see, you know, maybe, I'm going to say in 2 days, seven boats or something. Five, six, seven boats. I mean, very few people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what makes it good over there. And I didn't realize it, but we looked out. 2-3 days after we left over there, they closed snapper season.
Did they?
I didn't realize. Yeah, on the 9th, this past Sunday, they closed snapper season. So
that's another question, too, though. It's good when you're there to be able to catch four instead of two. But would you rather have more days? Right, because, yeah, I mean, this is the balance.
Right.
I mean, if you're there and you can go on the days and catch your four, I get it. But if you go, hey, this has come up, would you take more days at two snapper to have a chance? You know, because I've made, what, one snapper trip this year? That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for, you know, September, October, you know, later this month in September, October, to be able to make another trip, hopefully, or two. But if I was in Louisiana, I'd be shut down.
Yeah, but they got a lot of other stuff to catch over there,
they
too.
Do.
So, you know, they're being shut down, it is detrimental over there, I think, as it is here. And I didn't realize, you know, you forget all this stuff, but amberjack season was open while we were over there, and I didn't even realize. Of course, I'm glad I didn't realize it, because that would have made me want to keep one or two of them. But I didn't. I released all of them, but we caught a ton of big amber. I'm talking about, you know, 60, 70, maybe better amberjacks. We caught some whoppers.
Did you have some young people on the boat?
Yeah, I did have a couple of young people on.
Because I want to see catch a 60 or 70 pound amberjack. I'm good for like one of those on the trip, and after that, you've seen me when we've been amberjack. I'll catch one, and I'm like, I'm good.
Well, we do it a little different. We're using bent butt rods.
Oh, Mike has a pull cue,
putting them in a rod holder, so I'm not standing up fighting them anymore.
Right.
So it does make a lot of difference on that. There's no question about that. I borrowed a reel rod from you, and we had one. I got two like yours, and I had yours.
He's on the electric reels.
Yeah. And anyway, we broke one of them, and I was thinking, oh no, that's going to be Sean's rod that we broke, but it was not. It was one of my rods, but we had a good fish on. I don't know what it was.
And that's a bent butt rod. Yeah. We had the same rods.
Yeah, bent butt Daiwa rod, and we had a good fish coming up, and something hit that thing, and it
snapped that rod.
It snapped that rod at the butt.
I mean, y'all, I was looking at it at Mike's house. It was unreal.
I mean, it was whatever hit it. It might have been a big shark, big group, or whatever it was, but it turned that rod into a pretzel.
Unbelievable. All right, coming right back. More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, glad to have you all along. Also, not too far off, we'll be visiting with you in person at the G&D Outdoor Expo. Yeah. Less than a month away from that.
Yeah, that's on the 13th.
It's 11th, 12th, 13th. Yeah. So that's going on, which is harbinger of things to come. Hunting season, even though we're still doing plenty of fishing now, start looking at hunting season. And, you know, whether it be getting up early, working on deer patches, You know, what you're doing there, you're spraying, mowing, those kind of things going on. I will say this, if you're spraying or you're mowing, you're always talking about no-mow May and what to do to try to not bust up turkey nest or quail nest. Got a lot of fawns dropping right now. So be aware of that.
Have you seen some at your place?
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
So. Well, this is time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's August, usually about the middle of August through the middle of September, end of September. I mean, that's the biggest time. Of course, they still drop sometime in November sometime.
Absolutely. You know? And it depends. Yeah. You know, I've talked about this, how we have a rut where we are that's very similar to the Black Belt.
Yes.
I mean, our peak of our rut is mid-January.
Yeah.
The 15th through the 20th, something like that. But I do have, you know, like everybody, I hadn't shot the does I need to shoot. So we have a secondary rut, so we'll have some drop later. But yeah, I get, it surprises people, being in Mobile County, that I have fawns drop beginning of August.
Beginning,
6-7 days into August.
Yeah. But you may have some first of August too. You just
just don't see them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's going on right now. So just take that into account too. I mean, if you're going to be, you got a big field that, Mama may be hiding a fawn, and think about that when you go mow.
Yeah, just be careful.
Yeah.
I mean, it can happen. I
I've never hit one, but I have come. I had one under the loader.
Yeah.
So, the front end loader on the tractor, this has been 10, 12 years ago, bush hogging, and just something caught my eye. I don't know if it's like the white on the inside, it's something I just went, and stopped that big John Deere.
Yeah.
Got out, and it was doing what it's supposed to do, not move.
Yeah.
Right? So they're supposed
to
not move.
That's what happens. You would think they'd get up and run, but they don't.
They don't. And it was as close as it was under the loader of that tractor.
Yeah.
And I went, uh-oh, all right. And for a while, there was a big section in the middle of this field that was not bush hogged. What happened? I said, well, there's a fawn there. So I didn't bush hog it. But, yeah, just think about that as you go out.
Just be careful.
Also, talking birds-wise here, so we've got – dove season starting in, 3 weeks here? Yeah, about 3 weeks with the 5th. So, north zone, first split, the 5th. And then you've got the 12th for south zone.
Okay, it opens here the 12th.
Yeah, the south zone.
Yes.
North zone, though, which is the bulk of the state, it starts on the 5th.
Yeah.
So the weekend of the Outdoor Expo, we'll do the show from 11 to noon. And at noon, I'm hauling butt because I'm going to shoot... going to shoot doves. Yeah, you and I were talking about that, how, just stuff, my summer planting, how that's looked.
Yeah.
It's been, so I did sunflowers this year.
Looks good.
Yeah, made some sunflowers this year.
And the only reason you made it is because you put up fencing.
That's right. And not just any fencing.
So that was worth the effort
to
do it.
It's some work.
Yeah.
You know, I do everything pretty much by myself. So
how much did you plant?
So that was 1.5 acres of sunflowers. It's a 5.6 acre field and 1.5 acres in the middle. Is sunflowers.
So how long did it take you to fence that off?
You know, I don't have exact time because I do stuff in waves. I come home after work and do, driving T-post. I got that done in probably an hour and a half or so, 2 hours. I mean, it's,
So and then 6 hours, maybe eight hours?
Yeah, not even, probably.
Yeah. 6 hours and you was able, because you've never been able to grow them before.
That's correct.
Yeah,
well, I've been able to get them to come up.
Yes.
And then the deer eat them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now, I mean, you showed me a picture of them.
Yeah, I got a field. Yeah.
You got a great field of them.
And the fencing thing, so, and I think we talked about it before, but I'm doing the two-fence system, meaning, so I'll describe it maybe. And you can look this up online. You can see pictures of it. But so acre and a half, I drive regular T-post in, like we use with fencing for cattle and all that. So T-post in and, spacing, it's probably 20-foot. Maybe I came back. 10 is what you normally do in fencing, but maybe I spanned 20.
Yeah.
Because you're not trying to keep a bull from pushing through it, and you're only having two wires on it. So so I think I spanned 20. So I did that in T-post. All right, so those are set. And then I take the step-in. You'll see them at your, go to G&D or whatever. You'll see the step-in electric fence post. And you can get them taller. I got mine. They're probably 36-inch.
Yeah.
Maybe they're 3 foot, maybe they're 36, maybe they're less, somewhere in there. And those are just plastic. They have a spike on the bottom. You step them in. What I did is off every T-post, I came out 3 foot from that T-post and did a step in.
Outside the fence.
So you picture those T-posts now with an acre and a half in the middle.
Right.
Here the T-posts are standing. Then off each T-post, I came out. I had a kept a section of PVC pipe, 3 feet, put it at the bottom of the T-post, lay it down, put the step in right there.
Yeah.
So now you can picture I've got a ring of T-post and then a ring of step ins 3 feet out from it.
Okay.
And then on.
So what does that do?
Okay. So then I go put my wire up. So I have, I forget all my measurements. I have a low wire, and this is all using electric fence wire, even though I really didn't need to do it on the bottom run. But the bottom run, let's say that's at 12 inches or something like that. Yeah. I don't know, forget all my measurements. Run that wire around. This is through the T-post, right, with the connectors, the plastic connectors for it. So run that around. I do another one that's probably 6 inches, 8 inches higher than that, right?
Right.
And I run that wire around as well. That one ends up being hot. On the outside, I talked about the step-ins.
Yeah.
I put one in between the higher wire on the inside and the lower wire. So splitting the difference, which is 22 inches, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Put that wire in there. And so I run that around the whole thing. It all comes back to the solar electric fence unit.
Yeah.
And that's one of your bigger costs in this, too. Now, I got lots of the, you know, fence equipment I have around the farm. But, yeah, I had to get a solar-powered electric fence charger and put that in. And then so the wire, there's only one wire on that outside fence.
Yeah.
That one that's like 20, 22 inches. It goes back to the solar fence charger and a grounding system.
There's only one hot wire. Is that what
there's
you're
one
doing?
Hot wire on the outside. And
one
then
on
one,
the inside.
And then one on the inside.
All right. So there's
so
two.
So what I'm doing is, like, if you try to go over or under this scenario, you're going to get a zap.
Yeah.
What happens is, with that 3 feet of spacing, deer, because their eyes are on the side of their head, they don't see space the same way we do. They don't see, the perspective is different. And they did this research 25, maybe more years ago here in Mobile County. It spread throughout, you know, the nation as people do it for soybeans and all that. There was farmers here saying, how the heck can we keep them out of our crops?
Yeah.
And so the deer come up to it, and I watch it. I ease up to the dove field and watch this. Deer will get up and pace up and down it and, like, go to it and back up and go to it and back up. Their depth perception, even though they could easily clear, this is nothing high.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The fact that there's one wire there, and the hot is, early on they did these things and didn't even electrify them. I did double insurance, like if they try to mess with it, get close, they get a zap. They don't feel like they have enough room to jump over that first little wire and have space to then jump over the next wire. Right? There's not enough space to land. That's me putting my deer brain for what
it is. And that's
they
logical.
Just and they won't. I mean, they could easily jump both fences. They get a running start and scale that no problem.
Sure.
But something about it, they don't think they can do it.
Yeah,
and you saw I finally got a good sunflower crop.
Well, if you're going to have a crop, you have to do that with the deer densities you have.
Exactly,
there.
It depends on where you are. Right, there's people who say, "Man, I've gone on some fantastic shoots over sunflower in Baldwin County and in Mobile County." But these are places that are in the middle of tons of ag. There's not a lot of deer bedding close.
No, they're doing more than an acre and a half too most
Correct.
Of the time.
Yeah. Most of the time they do, but sometimes it's not as much. You know, a farmer can only allocate so many of his tillable acres to a bird shoot.
Right.
I mean, he's got to make money on his crops, but they'll have him way out away from place where deer is going to be bedding. I don't have that.
Right.
I got deer everywhere. So I had to do this. And people do it. You'll see it. People do it for, like, try to grow some soybeans.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, it's kind of counterintuitive.
It is. That's
the
only
problem
with that. You want them eating it. You know, that is the problem with trying to fence in your
Yeah, you're going to get you a pretty picture. You can go out and get your picture made in your soybean field, but the fact that it grew up that high meant the deer didn't eat it. Now, there is a chance, what I'll probably use this for in the future, too, with soybeans is to get it up, because I don't have a 10-acre field to plant in beans.
Right.
You know, I have 5.6 is the biggest, you know, single field that I could get them up to where they can take the browsing.
Right. If you use like a group 8 soybean that grows real fast, they don't produce as many beans typically, but they grow real fast. So if a deer nips on it, it sprouts right back out.
Right. But
so
you have to get them to a certain height before they do that.
So that would work for that. But you want them to, I mean, the earlier you can get the deer on it, the better benefit they're going to get out of it. So you're wanting them to get all that protein. So if you can get that plant up, typically about a foot and a half to 2 foot.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, then even in a 5-acre field, it can stand them.
They can pretty much stand the pressure. So then,
but
you
what
take
happens,
the
everybody,
down.
Is you plant it, you don't have a fence, and it comes up 2 inches.
And they eat it.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Because I have that.
They pull the whole root and everything out.
Pretty interesting, too. Around that sunflower field, I have millet, a bunch of millet. But in there, I also had rows of beans and corn in there. Now, they changed by the time I get home today, but they assassinated the beans that are out there. They pick them right out of where they're in the millet, outside. They eat all of those. I got a corn crop. They probably, out in my neck of the woods, they probably don't know that corn doesn't come out of a bag and grows on a it grows on a plant. So we've got a heck of a corn crop.
Yeah.
They hadn't touched that yet. That could change, but right now.
I'm surprised the coons hadn't gotten
it. No, they hadn't either. But I've reduced their population just pretty significantly.
Might check the corn. You might not have nothing in the shucks.
Yeah, they may have gone in there, took it, and then put the shuck right back.
Yeah.
Listen, I wouldn't put it past them. All right, coming right back, more of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward. Glad to have you all along. And good question Mike was asking me during the break there. Because I think last time we talked about it, I was having stuff grow up and starting to hit the wires.
Once the electric fence got put up, once the grass comes up and hits the electric fence, it semi-grounds
it. It grounds it out. Yeah, you start losing effect from it. So, and
you still
early
have
on,
a little charge there, but it's not as
it's
effective.
Less and less. More stuff that touches it. You know, and I have 6 grounding rods. I drove it. I mean, I have a real the grounded system, which is the key to any electric fence, is real good, but it can only put up with so much.
Yeah.
So remember, I had wires at different heights. Early on, that bottom wire on the inside fence, the T-post fence, had grass on it, but it didn't have a charge on it.
Yeah.
So that was okay. Early on, I did some spray in there. I talked about, that I had some issues. I have some issues under my sunflowers, even though I used a pre-emerge herbicide there. Rained a bunch right after I planted, didn't get the best from it. But the I did go in and spray clethodim early on. But grass grows. I mean, once we had that rain, growing like crazy. So it hit the lowest wire. That would be the inside fence first. Didn't matter. No charge on that one. Couple weeks later, and I'd pluck stuff, and take, just stuff out here and there as I walked around in the afternoons, but it got to the outside fence, which is the next going up in height. At that point, my sunflowers were growing and doing good. I unplugged that one.
Okay.
I took that wire off.
Okay.
And then it was another, it was just 2 weeks ago or so, they got high enough, and it was really sunflowers that were touching that inside fence hot wire. It's funny, you saw one of them, the sunflower head had been on it enough, it looked like it had been scorched from it. It really did. And so when it got up that high, then I undid the other wire. But at that point, it could all change tomorrow.
Would that be enough to start a fire?
I don't know.
I don't. You ought to find out.
I don't know. But listen, as green as everything's out there, I don't think I had an issue. But so right now, I have no charge going through the fence.
Yeah.
So, if the deer are listening, I'm lying.
But the deer still aren't going in.
Correct. You got the 2D, the two-fence effect that messes them up.
Right.
And they probably all gotten a little nose full of electricity. So, they're probably saying, don't want to do that again. Turkeys love it. I don't know if they get shocked or not. I mean, because sometimes I see them fly over the wire. Sometimes I see them,
So they get into sunflowers.
Absolutely. I don't know if they were getting, I'm sure they're getting sunflowers, but at the same time, there's a lot of bugs and stuff. You have dirt, and it was really good for poults. Remember, I think I told you I just did not see a lot of poults
right,
early.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, like I said, even though I'm the camera running full, and I run a ton of cameras, I'm the guy to tell you, camera doesn't take picture of everything that goes on.
Sure. Yeah, I know that for a fact.
I mean, you get this idea because the cameras that you know everything. You don't know everything.
No, you don't.
You don't. So I was worried about, poult recruitment this year. It's not great. It's not what I want, but I didn't see them when they're bitties. I started seeing them when they're chicken size.
Yeah.
And got, you know, good crop. So, yeah. But they get in with the hens in that sunflower seed, and they're getting stuff underneath the sunflowers. I'm sure they're pecking some sunflowers, but I hadn't seen anything like any kind of damage.
Yeah.
They're just in there probably getting all the grasshoppers and stuff that are underneath it.
So what will you do with the sunflowers? You're going to take the fence down soon, I assume, probably in another week or so.
Yep.
And then what?
And I don't know, you know, I'm starting to think, I'll take out the step-ins, you know, pull the wire off everything and roll it back up on the for next year.
Yeah.
And pull up the step-ins because they're easy. I don't know. We'll see how much I'm going to pull up all the T-posts or not, but yeah. I might. But, yeah, so at that point, I'll go in and I'm mowing. I'll mow sections. Like I've been mowing the millet outside. I'll mow some sections of sunflowers inside, which will give me some access to get in there with the sprayer because sunflowers have fully done their thing, so I'm not going to – they're dying. They're, you know.
Right.
I'm going to spray to kill all the grass that's underneath because sunflowers is one part of that formula, but bare dirt underneath.
That's what the doves like.
That's what they like.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
So you need to be spraying that now.
Yeah, but the problem is getting in there.
Yeah.
So you got to think about it. So say you go in there right now and go to spray it, but you don't have, you say I'll go in there with a, you know, my UTV with my 25-gallon tank, and I've got a boomed and a boomless sprayer. But go in there with the, let's go with the boomless. I'm running over a ton of sunflowers to spray. See what I'm saying? The spray pattern is going to get, sunflowers are high enough. You're going, even if you said, okay, I'm just going to go a UTV wide.
Right.
But that, the sunflowers are big enough. You're only spraying until you hit the sunflower. You're not carrying, you know, you would have to.
Not going past.
You'd have to have a pipe running up 8 feet, and then your boomless sprayer to spray over the top of them. So you're running, so you got an issue there. So that's why I'm going to go ahead and do
that. You can do that. You can make that if you want.
You can. But I also don't want to, the amount of time I spend around herbicide, I don't want to shower myself with more of it than I already get around. But so I'll mow strips through there.
Yeah.
And that'll give me access to run through and spray. And I could even, in some areas, just take, I have a handheld also there and spray.
Yeah.
I mean, early on those sunflowers, and because they're not in rows, I don't have a drill.
Well, sure.
I don't have a row planter.
Sure.
So they're broadcast. But early on, I walked through with a backpack sprayer with clethodim. Just trying to keep. I've put some sweat in this joker.
Yeah,
but it's a. It's been fun. That fence thing. If that's something you want to do, you know, to keep them out of whatever. You know, the place I think it would work is like we talked about the bean thing. You could get them up and get them going. The other place I would do it. I'm talking about my corn crop. If you'd like to have corn, standing corn to hunt over, you know, you could fence out. You could do a whole field there and just do it in corn.
Sure.
You know, make sure you have, I mean, everybody likes to think, believe me, I'm like you. I'm the grandson of a farmer. I like to grow corn. I like to grow these crops. Make sure you have other stuff going on to feed those deer in the summertime, especially now. This is when it gets tough.
Right.
You know, this is when stuff is not as easy for them to digest. You know, spring and stuff, they got food everywhere. But this time it gets tough. So make sure you have some other stuff. Like we talked during the break, I did deer vets this year, been happy with it.
Yeah. So how are they hitting that?
They're massacring it.
Really?
But it takes it.
Yeah.
It takes it for dang ever to get up. It's not like, you know, a lot of stuff, I mean, you know, you're planting wheat in the fall and the dang seeds falling out of the hopper and already starting to grow.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's not like that with deer vetch. It took it a while, but it's definitely taking the browsing pressure. I like it. But I'm
saying,
yeah, somebody could, you know, if you wanted to have standing corn to hunt over it, you could use this two fence system I do and have acre of corn in front of that shooting house.
Yeah.
Standing corn.
All right.
There you go. We'll do it again next week. By the way, next week, we're talking birds big time here. I know with season coming up for doves, we'll talk about migratory birds, doves, and ducks on next week's show.